Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
All right, Joy Fox, welcome back to Bartholomew Town. As you just mentioned, it's been a couple of months since you were on, which is nuts because it feels like it was like 3 weeks ago. But boy, have things picked up in terms of we're approaching the primary in rapid fashion here.
Yeah, it's crazy.
How does it? Well, definitely. Yeah. But how does it feel on your end in terms of where you were a few months ago positioned with where you are now, and not even worrying so much about or thinking about polling data, but just what you're experiencing out on the street?
Yeah. It gets more exciting every day, actually. Mm-hmm. You can feel the momentum picking up. We have been out knocking on doors for probably about a couple of months now as well, and we're starting to hear people tell us, yeah, I'm starting to think about the race, and I like what I hear, and asking questions, too, which is really great. You know, when I ask, are you thinking about the race, that answer has been getting a lot more, yes, I am, and here are some things that are on my mind. The thing that I'm sure doesn't surprise you that's on most minds for the doors that we've been talking to, or the people that we've been talking to, we haven't been talking to doors.
Yeah.
to the people we've been talking to is choice. It's choice. It's choice. Mm-hmm. The other night, too, I was on the door and an issue of pay equity came up, which was also a very interesting thing. You hear a lot of things out there, but it's choice, a little bit about cost of living, and then, you know, whatever's on people's minds, which varies from how their day was at work all the way up to this heat. I mean, we've been out in some pretty hot weather talking to folks, so it's been good. So the momentum is there, and things are ramping up.
Yeah, and one thing, certainly choice is going to be, you know, it's one thing that basically all of the candidates in the Democratic primary seem to agree on. Spencer Dickinson, who entered this race, you know, last second sort of entry, he actually was on the Dan York Show. We're taping this on Thursday. He was on yesterday and revealed, I think for the first time, that he's comfortable with the idea of states managing abortion laws. In other words, he's satisfied with the Supreme Court decision that, again, pretty much the rest of your opponents seem to be on the same page that is outrageous to dismantle standing law. Quickly, your reaction to Dickinson on that?
It's unfathomable, I think. It's unconscionable. I think, you know, when we said I was here 2 months ago, I think that night is when the Supreme Court decision leaked. I think we talked earlier in that day. That's how much things have changed since the last time we were together talking. And I'm heartened by the vote in Kansas that we saw. It is clear that this transcends party lines. This is an issue of privacy between a woman and her doctor and their families. There's no place for the government and to be in the middle of those conversations. Abortion care is health care, and that's the way it needs to be. And we need to make it the federal law of the land.
Yeah, no question from my perspective as well that especially running inside the Democratic primary that would be the position. But hey, I guess as they say, it's a wide tent. What are you going to do?
There's nothing I can do about where my opponents stand on things. The best thing that I can do is make my position very clear. Congress needs to protect a woman's right to choose. Abortion is health care, and we need a federal law taking care of that once and for all.
No question that just general economic issues are major right now. We look at Providence specifically, you know, in terms of, and that's partially inside the district that you're running in, but the cost of living for a rental has gone up 23% over the last year. Statewide, we're seeing enormous housing cost increases. Gas prices have receded a bit, but still something that people aren't that comfortable with, food, et cetera. At this point, what would you say is the number one thing that if you were elected to Congress, you could do to try to encourage a calming of what seems to be a movement towards, number one, rapid inflation and hopefully not stagflation with a looming recession potentially coming?
Well, I think that the recent legislative proposal that we've just seen come out of the Senate is encouraging, and it moves us in the right direction, not only for the long term in terms of climate issues, but prescription drug prices, letting Medicare negotiate prescription drug prices, something we've all talked about for a really long time. It's good to see movement on that. I think in the short term right here in Rhode Island, or I shouldn't say the short term, but if I am elected here, the one thing that I hear constantly from literally Block Island to Boroughville is housing, as you just alluded to. So what can we do to not only help first-time home buyers, but help older people who would like to downsize and stay here, those affordable options so that people can live and work here? And it isn't just about the house, right? It's about our communities at large. It is about workforce. It is about having people able to fill the jobs that we have. And it's you know, one thing that I hear from employers constantly is, I've got these vacancies. I find a good person, the talented person that I need, but they're not willing to make the 50 to 60 minute commute. And that doesn't promote a good quality of life. So we have to get really serious, not only on the home side, but the rental side as well. Yep. And I think there's wide agreement on that. And I think we are seeing more money. I think some of the ARPA funds eased some of the uses on that to go into more housing. So I think that has to be a top priority in terms of just the economics of the state in general, separate and apart from the current rising costs of cost of living and gas and groceries. This problem was here, and it's only being exacerbated. So we gotta get our arms around it.
What can be done at the federal level to try to calm housing prices? I mean, is there any legislation that you would introduce? I mean, does it come down to just, we're in this and we have to think on a state-by-state basis and you try to secure as much funding as possible?
Exactly.
It's
working with your colleagues in the delegation to secure that funding. It's talking to different community organizations, community development organizations like LISC, who does a lot of work in the state for affordable housing, and other agencies like that, to make sure that they have the resources. And also understanding, you know, it's not just a question with so many things. It's like, let's just get it more money. No, these agencies and these people on the front lines in our communities have plans, have ideas, can see where the exact need is and how to do these things. So it's about bringing people around the table. It's, of course, leveraging the funding at the federal level, but then making sure that we are deploying it as efficiently and strategically as possible, just not throwing money, good after bad at a problem. And I think we've got a lot of good people in the state working, and agencies and organizations working on this to make sure that they are part of those conversations to deploy as quickly as possible from, again, the housing market, the rental market, and homelessness. We have to look at the total picture.
Speaker Pelosi just got back from, I believe she's landed back in the U.S. from Taiwan. Are you comfortable with that trip and that sort of diplomacy? And it seemed like there was some division amongst, you know, the executive branch and even within the party as to whether or not that was the right move. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've been following it just as you are, Bill. I don't have any inside information on that. I didn't even know that she had landed back in the country.
I say that assuming that she has, you know. But.
No, she did not call me.
Okay.
those are things that our not only are on the diplomatic side, but on the defense side, you know, those are things that that need to be looked at and analyzed seriously. And, you know, my standard here is it is diplomacy first and see what we can do. And a very, very high threshold for any type of deployment in any situation.
Yeah, and kind of leaning into just international geopolitics as well. Just as a rule of thumb, your thoughts on the U.S.'s role as the hegemon in terms of, you know, being the world police officer, so on and so forth. And, you know, how do we navigate that fine line of being a source for a rule of law or however you want to frame it, with interfering with other entities, other nations, other nation states, other governments, whatever it may be? How do you balance that?
It's a good question. It's a complicated question. No doubt the United States has a leadership role on a global scale, and one that we need to make sure that we are using diplomatically, and again, bringing people around a table. It's really no different than any other issue like housing that we were just talking about, making sure that lines of communication are open and that our strategic interests as a country are protected, but that we are working with our global partners. You know, one thing that comes to mind is climate change in this area. Mm-hmm. This is not a country by country issue. This is a global issue. And it is an issue that we need, as a global community, need to come together on to tackle. Because, you know, the Bill and Joy sitting in another, on another continent right now, having a similar conversation, you know, it's the same climate that we are all living in. So that's how I look at it.
We're speaking with Joy Fox, who is a candidate in the Democratic primary coming up on September 13th. Of course, early voting and mail ballots and so forth.
August 24th actually is early voting. It's the 20 days before. And I do have to give the General Assembly credit. They passed the Let Rhode Island Vote Act this year, which extended all of the COVID provisions that we had for voting as well. But August 24th is the early voting. You can go to your town hall, city hall, up until September 13th.
Let's talk about the race itself, kind of zeroing in on your opponents here. Obviously, we talked about Dickinson in the beginning, but Seth Magaziner, the general treasurer of Rhode Island, is, you know, he is widely viewed as the front runner here. He's moneyed. He has an ad out right now. Your thoughts on the reality of, with 5 weeks to go until the actual primary and less than that until early voting, your thoughts on how do you chip away at what his polling numbers show as a commanding lead and what I suppose if you just look at it from a financing side, would show as a commanding lead.
Yeah, it's doing exactly what we're doing right now, having a conversation. I am doing this multiple times a day with all sorts of people. So it is working. I've never shied away from a challenge. I always jump in, roll up my sleeves, and work as hard as we possibly can. So that's number one, is we're just out there. We're just out there talking to everyone that we can. And I would say, again, back to talking about housing and international relations and climate change, you know, if you want to solve these problems in Washington, you have to change the kind of person that you're sending there. Someone like me that, you know, grew up here. I grew up in Cranston. I live in Warwick. I went to Rhode Island College. I was a commuter student to Rhode Island College. And I run a small business now. I am working. I was working this morning before coming in to see you. I don't have the luxury of not working and running this campaign. And yes, bizarrely, I think I'm doing both at 100% at this moment.
It can be done.
So there's a choice in this race. There's a choice on if you want to solve these problems, you have to change who you're going to send there. And that means someone that's willing to dive into every problem and work hard, not someone that grew up with a trust fund or went to fancy schools or can fund their campaigns with thousands and thousands in personal loans. There is a difference and there is a choice here. And that's the case that I'm working very hard to make right now. And it's going well. We're going to keep at it. And anyone listening right now, there's door knocking opportunities. There's phone banking. Donations and contributions are always helpful, especially in this last sprint, because everything we're doing is about talking to voters at this point. And then just making sure that you have a plan to vote, as we were just saying. August 24th is the early voting, especially if you've got kids, students who are headed back to college who listen to you. I say directly to them, before you go back to school, head over to City Hall and vote. I mean, for everything that we've talked about here, all the challenges, starting with Roe v. Wade, to housing, to climate, to international diplomacy, it comes down to the vote. It comes down to using our voice, and the vote is the way that we do that. I was in Wickford at one of the North Kingstown Town Beach concerts, and I got this really interesting question. Walked up to a fella, and he said, if you have one vote in Congress, one vote, your entire term, you can only vote once on one thing. What is it? And without hesitation, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. Because if we don't have that, if we don't have the vote, and if the vote is not protected, nothing else matters. It's the foundation of everything that our great country is built on. And I take that very, very seriously. So again, I would say, college kids, if you're listening, please, before you go back to school, but also just everyone else, make a plan. Make a plan between August 24th and September 13th. It's important.
In the event that you win this election, you would be matched up against Alan Fung, the former Cranston mayor. He was on Bartholomew Town 2 weeks ago. You can find that on at ripodcast.com if you haven't heard it yet. But, you know, it's interesting. Mayor Fung's trying to position himself at this, in two ways at the same time, essentially, as appealing to conservative voters, but also as someone who can thread that independent needle here in Rhode Island. In a matchup with Alan Fung, what are the key differences besides the obvious, you know, besides the fact that he's a Republican and you'd be a Democrat? How do you appeal to the average voter in Congressional District 2 in Rhode Island in a way that differentiates you from Alan Fung?
I think you just answered the question for me. You said he's trying to do things in two ways, and that's the problem. There's never one way with him. It is always trying to thread a needle. It is always trying to bob and weave. It is always trying to not answer your questions, Bill. What you see is what you get here with me. There is only one way. I grew up in Cranston. I live in Warwick. I love my community. I believe in the power of government to make a difference. And I will take that to the voters in the general election all day long. And the fact that I am a hometown girl and he's the hometown boy, I will put my hometown girl up against the hometown boy all day long. I did cover him in his first race when he ran for citywide with Mayor Laffey. I've known him for a very long time, and I think that is part of the problem. We don't know where he stands on very important issues, mm-hmm. and the bobbing and the weaving and wanting it two ways should be a huge red flag to anyone in the general election, whoever the Democratic nominee is. I have to say, that argument that you just made for us is a key one. It's a key distinction. He needs to start telling us the one thing that he believes on these things, not trying to thread a needle.
One question that he wouldn't answer clearly was whether or not he would accept former President Trump's endorsement. I think it's only fair to ask a similar question to you. Would you accept President Biden's endorsement?
Yes. If this race goes to that level, that'll be a very interesting, and I will be here every day talking to your audience. it is important that we keep the Democrats in the majority and the Democrats in the White House, whoever they may be. And whoever is in this general election, and I do believe it will be me, will need all the help they can get, for sure. And it's important that we all come together to defeat a guy who's not sure where he stands on things.
Last question here, last minute or so. Term limits for Congress people. I don't think we talked about this in the previous interview. If we did, my brain is at max capacity.
Thanks,
exactly.
Bill. Yeah. You don't remember everything I said.
What do you think? Term limits for Congress people?
Yeah, I think two things. One, the voter is the ultimate decider that. But yes, I think I don't know what the number is. I'm sure there's reams and reams of data to see what is the best way to go there. But yes, I support term limits.
Joy Fox is running for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District Democratic primary. We'll be back here in a month or so for the debate we're having here on Bartholomew Town WPRO. And I'm sure we'll hear from you as well on the radio with Dan and so on and so forth. As always, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it. Take care.
Of course.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits. And 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.